There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 884, May 3rd. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say three down, three to go for century of success for the chosen one, the lucky one, and the best one. Back to machismo of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Bobby Unser passes away at 87. Mercedes obviously toying with Red Bull and Formula One. If you find Ricciardo's mojo, please return it at once. Gary brings us more in the pitlane.com news, and his weekly segment will now go to monthly. He's a busy man and he wants nothing but high quality. So he will now become a monthly member instead of a weekly contributor. I also want to remind everybody, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. I want to thank Stephen Boyd, Rob Derrick, Philip Pegler, and Gabriel Rosencotter for their contributions. We love you all very, very much. Nasser, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir, and to borrow a phrase from Mr. Giacomo Agostini, I am hurting in my heart, and this news about Bobby Unser hit me hard. What a great legend, and I'm very, very sorry to hear that news. But I guess this is all part of life, you know, cycle of life. How is Mr. Rogers doing?
Mr. Rogers was stunned and shocked, and, you know, it is a big bummer. The man himself. So it happens. It is the cycle of life, Nasser. Keep up the good work. And I'm just glad that we were all able to see this man race probably in more different formulas than anybody else in the world.
Yes, and you know, I had one of my best experiences in doing an interview was with Bobby Unser at Laguna Seca during one of the Monterey Historics many years ago. And that was just a great experience. And we'll talk more about him a little bit later in the program. And, you know, it's amazing. The family has won Indy 500 nine times. Three for Bobby, four for Al Unser Sr., and two for Al Jr. So what a great family from Albuquerque, New Mexico. And there is a big Unser Boulevard in ABQ. I used to live there, and actually lived very close to the main Unser Boulevard.
That's very good, Nas. Keep up the good work, and I'm sure you were in heaven, I guess, Portugal heaven.
Yes, sir. Actually, so was somebody else. It was a nice Portuguese vacation for Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes, sailing to success and, not surprisingly in doing so, sinking teammates' aspiration for victory and any hope of trying to fight for the championship, despite starting from pole position. Did you enjoy the race, sir?
I thought the second half was pretty dull, except for the Fernando excitement. But other than that, LCH wins, and I bake another quiche Lorraine.
Yeah, and Max demoted Bottas to third step of the podium to stay in the championship fight. But like you said, what a drive by Nando. He was on fire in the closing stages. What's happening with your hero?
The paella had a little too much hot sauce.
Ah, Very good. Very good. And the next race is in his home country, Viva España. Do you think we'll see him in the top five?
No, but his mommy will be there.
Mama and Papa?
See.
Yeah, but it's just a shame, you know, a talent like that is fighting with George Russell and Nikita Mazepin. It's very, very sad. But, you know, you have to sleep in the bed you make, and I think he made himself a futon some years ago. But that's for some other day. Sir, shall we take a quick look at Colley?
By all means.
Bottas. He was Toto's secret agent, denying teammate century of pole positions by 0.007. And this was Bottas' pole position number 17, which puts him on the same level of achievement of pole position as Jackie Stewart. So at least he's making something out of a whole lot of nothing, which Lewis and Max has dished out to him. But, you know, you cannot hold this against him, because how far will you go if you are teammate to Senna or Schumacher? It's just one of those things. Right place at the wrong time. Perez, this was interesting. Sergio Perez catching up to his illustrious teammate and sharing second row with Max. Carlito faster than teammate Charles Leclerc. And looks like Carlos Sainz senior, a junior, according to his own statement, he has adapted his driving style to fit in with Ferrari package, which right now, unfortunately, is not very competitive. Ocon, impressive, row 3, 6th on the grid, and Sebastian Vettel in top 10, well ahead of teammate Lance. It gave me a lot of hopes that we might see Seb fighting for, you know, trying to get in the top 5 or 6, but it was not to be. Now, let me ask you a question. Bottas on pole, this is a fantastic track, nice flowing corners, elevation changes and all that. Did you have any inkling that Bottas can and will win the race?
None whatsoever, really.
Well, you know, this is what my thinking was. For him to win a race, see, previously all he needed was Lewis to have a bad hair day and he would win a race. And those moments were coming every now and then. But now he's got Lewis and Max both ganging up on him. And I think for him to win a race now, he will have to qualify with an advantage of 0.3 or even a little bit more. Otherwise, you know, if he's 0.1, 0.2, I just cannot see him hold off. Maybe he can hold off one of these two guys, but race long, I just don't see that happening. And I was not really surprised when he was passed. And I just knew victory will be for car number 44 and number 33. And Bottas did make a good start. You have to give him that. The start was very good and the restart was also pretty foxy. But once Lewis applied the Helsinki formula on him and slipped by on lap 20, Das party was over. And you know, for Lewis, last year when he won in Portugal, that was his victory number 92, making him all-time numero uno of Formula One. And I do like these messages. I don't know if these are coded messages, but when Lewis says, you know, the tires are going, or I'm experiencing this, or I don't know if he is saying this to psych out the competition, or if there's some hidden message there. But he was pretty much in charge. And a lot of people are giving him credit, people like Nico Rosberg and other drivers, that this guy knows how to win a race. So good for him, and his win tally is now what, like 97? Does that number impress you, Mr. Rogers?
I'm sorry, what was that, sir?
The win number 97, does that impress you?
If it wasn't a Williams, it'd really be exciting.
Yes. But I gotta tell you something, man. I am really, really looking forward to pole number 100 and victory number 100, regardless of what happens in the championship. And I think we're getting a flavor of what's going to happen in the championship after 3 races. So we'll see. It will be a great achievement. So I'm going to celebrate as a lifelong Formula One fan. Now, Red Bull, Max pounced on Lewis at the restart, but later complained after Lewis repassed him that he was a sitting duck on the straight. He did split the two Mercedes cars to finish second. the last-minute pit stop. This was interesting. The last-minute pit stop to grab fastest lap from Bottas on the final lap. And then he heard the news from Paul Di Resta. Now, best was a comment from Dr. Marco, who lamented, saying, "Now we have lost a victory, fastest lap, and pole to track limits." Well, the good doctor should know. Michael Massey's prescription is the same for all track-departing sickos. So Bottas gets one extra point, and that will greatly help him keep or achieve third position in the championship. It's really looking very bad for Bottas. Obviously, I don't have anything against him to be left behind, not just by his teammate, but by Max also. It's not a good situation. You know, Bottas has not won a race since the Russian Grand Prix last year, and that was 10 races ago. And in that time, the other car from the same team has won 7 times. So this is not very encouraging for Valtteri's CV, especially when Mr. Russell is knocking on heaven's door. Would you like to have some word of encouragement for Bottas like Toto did during the race?
Well, unfortunately, I believe Bottas, and I think he has a right to suspect that he lost straight line speed towards the end of the race. There was something found on the car that was faulty. I mean, there's always something on his car that's not quite up to spec. And LCH's car is always perfectamento. So Bottas, and not only that, but that plays into the psychological game. And he's going to slowly sink into that quicksand. And he will disappear eventually.
Yeah, well, you know, I heard a story about Ricardo Patrese and complaining similar things when he was teammate to Williams in the active suspension days. And this was from a senior member of the Williams team. And he was convinced that Mansell's car was better or whatever, set up more properly. And he wanted to switch cars. And apparently they switched cars. And then Mansell went faster than his own time while driving Patrese's car. So I do appreciate all these conspiracy theories. And I'm sure Valtteri thinks a lot about, you know, they're trying to favor him, this and that. But one thing I haven't heard from him, which I heard from somebody else, who could that be? That they are favoring him because he's British and so is the team. In this case, the team is a German, but at least it's based in Britain. But it's good that he has not come up with that cockamamie excuse. So I do respect him as a person. And I think if there was no, you know, one thing that is very sad, if there was no Lewis Hamilton this season, he would still not be world champion. And that would be very, very bad. What say you?
Yes. Well, he's not going to be world champion. I mean, he knows that. I mean, he's an adult. He watches television. He picks up the newspaper. He's a smart man. He knows that everything is going. See, when you walk into Mercedes, the horseshoes, they're not facing up, but they're facing all towards LCH. Bottas has no horseshoes. Bottas has no luck. But listen, Bottas has made a great living. Let's not sit here and be sad about Bottas. He's a wonderful guy, and he'll go on in retirement well and comfortable.
Yes, you're right. I mean, he has made a very good living from Mercedes, from his personal sponsor, to whom it may concern. So that's all good for him. But, you know, a racing driver, they want to win, so I'm sure it's hurting his pride. And we wish him all the best. Now, looking forward, I don't think he will be with Mercedes because I think it's time for them to take on George Russell. But let me ask you a question. Do you think he'll survive in Formula One if Toto gives him, you know, pink slip?
No, he will not survive.
Yeah, because most of the seats, good seats, are taken over. Where can he go?
Yeah, and luckily he hasn't been blacklisted like some other drivers that will never get the great package that he has right now. So he's actually ahead of the game.
Drivers have been blacklisted. How did I miss that news? Who could that?
Oh, you didn't see that? Yes, yes, yes. Whenever you see his name, you noticed that underneath, in very fine micro dot print, it says Ron Dennis has blacklisted this man for his entire career.
Now, Is this the driver that Christian Horner says he creates chaos?
I have no idea. I have no idea. All I know, he's a loving, wonderful, and highly talented and skilled driver. And the problem with the blacklisting is really, it just denies us great racing. He still has a beautiful paycheck and a beautiful mamacita in Oviedo.
No, his paycheck is very, very beautiful. That's for sure. I think his paycheck in bank balance is more impressive than his championships. He only has two compared to Lewis's seven. But, you know, what can you do? Oh, the eternal memory of two things I will remember about Nando. Apart from the incredible achievement of shooting down the Red Baron, that San Marino Grand Prix 2005, and that comment in Suzuka on a track owned by his people who were paying him $25 million a year. And he thanks them by saying on their own track, GP2 engine! Oh, boy. Maybe you should become a stand-up comic in America, you know, at the Fillmore. Alonso Fernando at the Fillmore. That'll be beautiful.
Bravo.
I have a question for you, sir. I thought, and I'm not expert on this, I thought Giovinazzi moved a little bit to the left when Kimi ran into him, not saying intentionally. But did you get that feeling, or was it just Kimi totally drunk and ran into the back of his teammate? What say you?
He was totally drunk, wearing a gorilla suit, and ran in the back.
Really? That's what you think?
That's what I think, yes. I mean, there was a little twitch there from Giovinazzi, but in the end, we're talking about a veteran here who knows what he's doing. Come on. What's the matter you? Hey.
Yeah, you know, last year he was 11th in Algarve, Portimao. And Kimi, this is his first DNF since the opening race of the season last year. So he's a very reliable guy, that's for sure. But I think he's, you know, they need to bring a young guy into that. Maybe put Mick Schumacher in that Alfa Romeo. And we'll have to see, you know, if Alfa Romeo will survive in Formula One. Now, sir, very interesting, speaking of Fernando, do you remember the day in Canada that will live in infamy when Nando in a McLaren was passed by Sato San in a Super Aguri?
Of course, that was one of my favorite moments.
Yes, people loved it at the track also. Well, history repeated itself when Yuki San did the same in Portugal on El Machismo, but by lap 14, this was not surprising given the way he goes. By lap 14, Sonoda had been given two track limit warnings, and then the team told him, one more and you're going to get a time penalty. So this kid is quick, a lot of people are very high on him, but a little loose cannon both in his driving style and mouth management. Now we come to Senor Sergio Perez, ran a long stint, which is his hallmark from his Sauber days. Martin Brundle called him fleet manager's dream, as he's very good in tire management, and that is very impressive. Fourth was his best finish for Red Bull. Perez may be a step ahead of Dan Quayle in terms of pace, but just my humble opinion, he is no JFK to Max when it comes to Formula One. You know, his qualifying time was very close to Max, so Dr. Marco has finally found somebody who can get within half a second of Max. But as the season progresses, do you think Sergio will catch up and out-qualify, out-race Max in a few races?
I think he will. I mean, he's already out-qualified him once, and Sergio Perez is still adapting to this car. So let's give him some time. Let's give Sainz Jr. a little more time. Let's give Vettel a little bit more time. And let's give Ricciardo a little bit more time.
Well, let's talk about all these people, starting with Lando Norris. He is racing like a new man compared to last year. And between him, he's doing so well with McLaren, but his teammate, Daniel Ricciardo, I mean, he did get a couple of points after finishing ninth. I don't know what the deal is there. Obviously, Daniel has not hit the delete button and lost all his cachet of talent. That's not the case. So I don't know if the car is totally designed, which is not suitable to his style, but I'm very, very surprised that Danny Rick is not grabbing Lando's throat every race and choking him like he choked Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull when he was fairly new to Formula One. You have any say on that, any spin on that, Mr. Rogers?
None whatsoever, but people do lose their mojo.
Yeah, and you know, his contract, I think, is for 2 or 3 years. He has put himself in a situation where it's going to be awfully hard for him to become world champion. I do see some wins for him once he gets going with McLaren, but I think championship is pretty much a done deal for him. Now, sixth was Charles Leclerc. And Charles Leclerc is pretty much being matched by his new teammate, Mr. Carlos Sainz. And Carlos Sainz has impressed me by adapting to Ferrari very quickly and not coming, because that's not a good team to thrive and survive, especially with the package they have. So I'm very impressed by Carlito that he's doing so well. And let's hope this trend continues. Carlos Sainz Jr. was quite a match for Max Verstappen when they were at Toro Rosso. I can see Carlos Sainz become world champion in a competitive car. What say you?
Well, I mean, a lot of people can become world champion in a competitive car. The biggest problem is there's only two. One for Bottas and one for the lucky dog.
There you go. And seventh was your fellow Francais, Mr. Esteban Ocon. He's been looking pretty good, and I don't know if he's looking good because Nando is not up to speed like Ricciardo. But I think Ocon may have some competition for a seat at Alpine, because I have a feeling that they may take Pierre Gasly in the next year or two, you know, French team, French driver. Plus, he's a Grand Prix winner now. I think the spotlight and the focus and pressure is on Esteban Ocon, unless Nando decides that, you know, I don't want to wait 3 years before I win a race. So, do you think Nando will go this year and next year? You're confident of that?
No, I'm not. He could leave. I mean, it's got to be pretty boring for him.
Yeah, especially with what he has right now. And then, of course, Monsieur Pierre Gasly took the final point. They keep saying AlphaTauri has a good car, but for some reason, whether it's not going out of track or issues coming, gremlins coming up with Gasly's car, they're just not delivering. Now, my man for whom I was very hopeful, Sebastian Vettel, was 13 for Aston Martin, behind Giovinazzi and his Alfa Romeo, both a lap down. And that is very, very sad for a four-time world champion, and who to this day is the youngest world champion. You mentioned that you have hope that Sebastian Vettel will rise up to the challenge. You know, as much as I would like to see that happen, I just have a feeling that maybe he's just got too many things on his mind. He's got a kid, he's got a boy now. And like you said, he wants to become a farmer. So I'm not holding much hope for Sebastian Vettel now. But I hope I'm wrong and we can see him on the podium. That will be nice, especially with Aston Martin. Anything else you want to you observe during the race? Anything you want to talk about, Senor?
Well, you know, all the talk about low grip, you know, it was annoying as hell. Listen, just race and shut the F up. But I love this track. I think it's a great bitchin' track. I hope we stay there every year.
Well, Max said the track layout is great, but he does not like the surface of the track. And in my final analysis, after two great races between Lewis and Max, we the peeps were expecting another battle royale. But it looks like Mercedes may not have a little runaway season as in years gone by, but will slowly eke out the championship aspirations out of the Red Bull like a boa constrictor. What's your bite for the rest of the season?
Well, I think we're going to slowly see Toto unleash the power of the Mercedes. I'm telling you, they're toying with everybody. They're making it look like it's competitive. They don't want Max to become a depressed recluse. They're trying to keep Max happy. I'm talking Formula One here, under the big umbrella. And it's a big job for Toto, because Toto feels a big responsibility to keep Mercedes happening and winning, yet keep Formula One interesting, and interesting in a way if there's a little competition, but we still win every race. So, I mean, it's the eighth championship. He's going to get the eighth championship. We'll see some fun. Max will win a couple of token Grand Prix, but really, Mercedes is going to dominate, and LCH is ready to build another trophy cabinet.
You know, talking of Toto and Mercedes power, what's his name who left Mercedes, went to Williams? What's the name of the gentleman? Paddy Lowe. Paddy Lowe was on Tom Clarkson podcast, Beyond the Grid, and he said in 2014, Mercedes did not want to show all the power they had in qualifying, so they were, you know, holding back. And Toto Wolff was asked about this, and he says, that's not correct. He went on to say that maybe Paddy was in a different place during the race. So who knows what the truth is. And sir, we shall look at the points now. Lewis Hamilton leading 69 points. Max second, 61, 8 points. As close as they are in performance and as fantastic drivers these are, I think Clark is just a matter of time before they have a coming together. Who's at fault is another story. But I think whoever drops out after a contact and has to witness the other guy pick up 25 points, that can be a fatal blow for the championship. But let's hope it doesn't happen and we have a great fight till the end of the season. But I think we're going to, if both cars finish, I think we're going to see both these drivers on the podium every race. And that will be very, very exciting. But at this old age, Mr. Rogers, I really do not want to see the championship go to the final race. Then it gets too much for me to handle. But we shall see. Lando Norris is third with 37 points. Now, this is interesting. Behind him is Bottas on 32 points. Bottas in the Mercedes, only 4 points ahead of Charles Leclerc of Ferrari. So the question is, behind Lando and barely ahead of Leclerc driving a Ferrari, how sad is that? I say no dos equis for that driver. Would you give him a case of or a bottle of Finlandia?
Perhaps. Once again, folks, this all goes to Toto. Toto is in full control. He likes the way Bottas plays a great number two. He's maybe playing it a little too well, but Paddy Lowe let it slip that they always had power in reserve because Toto wouldn't be caught dead without power in reserve. This is a very intelligent, well-organized man who never loses. Always reserve, always a little extra gas in the car, always an extra slice of salami on the sandwich. Never think Toto is going to let Lewis down because it's never going to happen. Bottas knows that, and Bottas is ready to finish his career with a few wins and no championship. It is what it is.
Well, you know, if your prophecy from this and last season come true and Lewis get number 8, and next season we're going to see wholesale changes in rules and regulation, obviously one team is going to get it right, more right than other teams. And if that team again turns out to be Mercedes, which I have a feeling it will, then what's going to stop Lewis from getting championship 9 and 10?
Nothing. I mean, that's the biggest problem is Lewis might have a deal where if the car is competitive, I'm not going anywhere. He's going to drive until he's 45. And I am telling you, that only does one thing. It denies a lot of new winners, a new championship. But on the other hand, these are smart people. They've made a deal. There's nothing we can do about it but watch the charade.
Yeah, what we the race fans deserve, which will never happen, is Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen as teammate at Mercedes. Boy, that would be civil war every qualifying session, every race.
Yeah, not only that, but you would have viewership triple or quadruple. All of a sudden, everybody from Beijing to Toledo, Ohio would be on the edge of their seats. I mean, it would be too exciting. We are not deserving of such excitement. So that won't happen.
And somewhere, hopefully next season, we can hear, and Fernando Alonso wins the Spanish Grand Prix.
On YouTube. I love it, Nass. Keep up the good work. Keep that thought. And now let's hear from Gary Sloan.
Hello, listeners. My name's Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So the recently published Nielsen Sports Report found interest in F1 was driven by younger audiences, galvanised by F1's social media, Netflix Drive to Survive, and esports. The research found 77% of the growth came from the 16 to 35 age group, and they predicted 1 billion people will be interested in F1 by April 2022. So as Liberty Media continues to pursue the promised land of digital streaming, the giants of Amazon, Apple, and Disney may well have a serious competitor in the shape of Dan's, the global sports subscription service. Why? Well, Dan's has just launched a 24/7 dedicated Spanish language channel, Dan's F1, in Spain. And they will have veteran Spanish F1 commentator Antonio Lobato and ex-Formula One driver Pedro de la Rosa heading up the coverage. Dan's are already covering most sports, and in particular motorsports, covering IndyCars, Formula E, Extreme E, the Dakar Rally, the World Endurance and the World Touring Car Series. It's believed the companies have their sights on the 20 Spanish-speaking countries, and the next step will include a Portuguese F1 channel to cover 11 Portuguese-speaking countries. Then in February, Dan's announced its sponsorship of the Scuderia AlphaTauri team for the 2021 season. The company means business. Back in March 2020, they announced the expansion into 200 countries worldwide, with its boxing coverage spearheading the growth. But when COVID-19 struck, Dan's suffered the loss of content and an exodus of subscribers from its service. This was ironic because it had marketed its cancel anytime policy as a selling point to fans. The company bounced back, and the service did launch back in December 2020 with an aggressive starting price point of $1.99 for its boxing, which will have the likes of Sky Sports worried. Then in April, the Athletica website reported boxing promoter Eddie Hearn has struck a record-breaking 9-figure deal with the Dan's, ending in the exclusive Sky Sports partnership. Dan's are ambitious and they're not hanging around, with the company securing the rights to show 7 exclusive Italian Serie A football matches every week in a deal worth $987 million per season. Even with these sums of money involved, Dan's co-chief executive James Runciton told Sport Business that "we will make money in Serie A in Italy, no doubt about it." He claimed the service will be a fans-first model by remaining accessible and value-priced. Well, not words to the average Formula One fan who watches their sport on free TV with neither the inclination or the money to watch behind a paywall will want to hear. Russian believes the move away from TV is inevitable, telling Forbes magazine. There's a seminal change happening in the balance of power between TV and over-the-top providers, where rights holders recognise the future of their sport is with platforms like Dan's. The tipping point has happened. So Dan's is looking to that new younger audience Liberty is cultivating, hoping to attract them with flexible contracts, cheaper subscriptions and the ability to watch on the device of their choice. But like the other players in the market, they need to invest up front, often incurring losses, witnessed by their 76% increase in subscribers pre the pandemic, but at a resulting $1.4 billion loss. So Dan's may not have the financial firepower of the likes of Amazon, Disney and Apple, but it does have the deep pockets, as it's owned by the multinational industrial group Axis Industries, best known for its ownership of the Warner Music Group. Well, and as often the case in F1, a billionaire is involved. Step forward, Ukrainian-born but London-based Sir Leonardo Blavatnik, worth $32 billion, making him Britain's richest man, ahead of second place INEOS boss and Mercedes team shareholder Sir James Ratcliffe at $17 billion. Blacktiff gained control of the Dan's Group back in 2014, and like fellow billionaire Dmitry Mazepan, he made his first fortune during the privatisation of Russian state assets, selling his Russian oil company TNK BP for $7 billion back in 2013. Blavatnik is the 46th richest man on the planet, as all the billionaire playthings, owning the obligatory $80 million 242-foot super yacht Odessa 2, and no less than 4 private jets, including a $150 million Boeing 767. It's fair to say he's also a philanthropist, having pledged over $700 million mainly to universities, including Oxford, Stanford and Harvard. So time will tell who will win the battle for Formula One's coverage, but no doubt, as always, as the case in Formula One, cash will be king. Well, that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, thank you. Another outstanding job. We'll talk to you next month. And now, let's take a quick break and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, hello, I'm Jean Lézy and you are listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. And we shall stay with Formula One to start the Motorsports Mondial and go to Suzuka. The Japanese Grand Prix has been confirmed until 2024. And if Yuki Tsunoda wins a race by then we can have another 10-year extension. Suzuka is owned by Honda, and all Japanese Grand Prix except two have been at Suzuka. And the only two that did not take place there were the epic 1976 title decider and the race in heavy rain in 2007, won by a rookie. And these races took place at Fuji Circuit, which is owned by Toyota. Sad news, Canadian Grand Prix cancelled, which means no Tim Horton donuts at Circuit Gilles Villeneuve, but we will have a Turkish delight as Istanbul is the replacement race, as confirmed by FIA. But the Canadian Grand Prix hopefully will come back next season, so there is hope. And now we move to MotoGP. They were racing at Jerez de la Frontera, and a magnificent time was spent there by Moi and Dr. Miguel a few years ago at the preseason testing. And at the Jerez airport, we ran into Charlie Whiting and had a brief chat with him. So good old memories. And of course, Jerez was scene of the classic last lap battle between Senna and Arnage way back in 1986. Now going to the MotoGP, victory to Aussie mate Jack Miller. His Ducati teammate Paco Bagnaia was second, and Paco is Italian. Marc Marquez, the 8-time world champion who escaped injury in a massive Saturday fall and another high-speed accident in warm-up, began the race in 14th and finished 9th. And it's very sad to see him not fighting for, first or second. His younger brother Alex also fell off the bike on the opening lap, and I think he hurt his shoulder. So we wish both of these hermanos or hombres all the best and back to winning ways as soon as possible. Sir, did you watch any of the IndyCar race Texas doubleheader in Dallas-Fort Worth?
I did watch some of it, yes sir. So exciting.
Yes, Flying Scots from New Zealand, night race on Saturday, won by Scott Dixon. And that was win number 52. So with a few more wins, he will pass Mario Andretti as number two most successful driver. And of course, number one is AJ Foyt. Rookie and Kiwi compadre Scott McLaughlin was an impressive second in his oval race. In his first oval race, driving for Roger Penske. And this Scott McLaughlin was driving in Australian supercars for Roger Penske's team down there. Race 2, big one at the start with Pietro Fittipaldi running into the back of Bore, and then Connor Daly, Ed Jones, Alexander Rossi, and Dalton Kellett. They all got involved, so big harem scarem, but everybody's okay, so that's good. And the big one was followed by a big victory for Mexican hot talent Pato Ward, driving for Schmidt, Peterson, McLaren team. And Zach Brown made a deal with Pato that if you win a race this season, you can test drive an F1 McLaren at the Abu Dhabi postseason test session. And Mr. Rogers, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix will be in December. Who knows what the COVID situation will be. But I'm planning a trip around that time back home, back to the base, original base, I should say. And if possible, I will attend the Abu Dhabi season finale. And what I'm thinking of, maybe I can stay for the postseason test. And I'm hoping that I may be wrong that if we do a interview at a postseason, maybe they will allow that to be used. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Okay. World Endurance Championship, also known as WEC, Spa 6 Hours, dawn of the hypercar era. Victory went to Toyota with Kazuki Nakajima, Sebastian Buemi, and Brendan Hartley. Easy to say F1 rejects, but I don't want to talk like that. But these are all F1 graduates. Let's put it this way. A second was interesting. Alpine A480, driven by Nicolas Lapierre, Mr. Negrão from Brazil, and Matthew Vassevier, who is also from Francia, like Nicolas Lapierre. The second Toyota of Kamui Kobayashi, Mike Conway, and Pachito, the famous F1 driver for US F1, Jose Maria Lopez from Argentina, he was third. Okay, sir, very interesting. American success on F1 weekend. In Portimao, during the Grand Prix weekend, there were three races in the Euro Open Championship. This is a series which was previously known as Spanish Formula 3. And impressively, all three races were won by American driver from Baltimore, Maryland, by the name of Cameron Das. And we have interviewed him in the past when he was racing in British F3. Enzo Trulli was third in the third and final race of the weekend. And there is another young American racing in this series, 16-year-old Jake Crawford, and he is in the Red Bull Junior program. And you know what that means, win five races or the championship or chop-chop. History of Portuguese Grand Prix. Shall I proceed, sir?
By all means.
Okay, the first Formula One Championship Portuguese Grand Prix was 1958 at the Boa Vista Street Circuit in Oporto, won by Stirling Moss in a van wall. The second Portuguese Grand Prix took place at another street circuit, this time in Monsanto Park in Lisbon area. Moss was again the winner, but in a Cooper Climax, and Dr. Miguel and I paid a visit to the circuit a few years back, and hopefully Mr. Miguel will see me at the Lisbon airport in the near future. The first F1 race at Estoril took place in 1984. McLaren men were on top of the podium. Prost won the race and Nicky won the championship by half a point. 3 years later, Prost would break Stewart's record of 27 wins, and some of us old-timers will remember ESPN doing a Heidi moment on this historic achievement by switching to Game Day America at like 7 in the morning, few laps before the checkered flag. So much for Total Sports Network. The 1985 Portuguese Grand Prix, which was the first year I was here in the US and watching races live, which was fantastic. The 85 Portuguese Grand Prix will be remembered for heavy rain, which gave a splashing first win for Ayrton Senna. Prost and Arnaiz have three wins in Portugal, and they are the most successful drivers there. Ferrari is the most successful team with 7 wins, which should not surprise anyone. Other winners include Michael Schumacher, Damon Hill, Gerhard Berger, Jack Brabham, Jacques Villeneuve, and Riccardo Patrese. And also, of course, you know, DC and LCH, your favorite. And now, sir, we come to, hate to end this on some sad news. More than one, Dick Mann, one of the most famous riders in American motorcycle racing history, he passed away last week. He was 87. He is famous for many things, and one of them is a victory at Daytona in 1970. And, of course, he was also AMA Grand Champion. I will quote this later as our famous last words from him. So we'll move on to the next sad event, which we already mentioned about Bobby Unser. Bobby was definitely one of the great legends of American racing. He won the Pikes Peak event in Colorado, I think like 13 times. Won the Indy 500 3 times. His family has won Indy 500 9 times. 3 for him, 4 for brother Al, and 2 for nephew Al Jr. And in 69, I believe. Or 60, I'm not sure, 1968 or 69. Maybe it was 69 when both he and Mario Andretti made their Grand Prix debut at Watkins Glen. And when I interviewed Bobby Unser at Laguna Seca, I asked him what was his impression of the BRM he drove. And in typical Bobby style, he said, "Hey, the car was a piece of caca." And Bobby also drove for Dan Gurney, won the Indy 500 for him, and also he won the Indy 500 for Roger Penske. And like the other Penske Indy legend Rick Mears, Bobby won the Indy 500 in 3 different decades, which is very, very impressive. And this is what Roger Penske said about him upon learning of his passing away. He said, and I quote, "Bobby was a ferocious competitor on the track, and his larger-than-life personality made him one of the most beloved and unique racers we have ever seen." End of quote. After his racing days were over, Bobby came into the booth, television booth with ABC, and his disagreements with Sam Posey at the Indy 500 were classic. And prompting with something I will never forget, one race fan writing a letter to the editor in one of the magazines saying, "Sam Posey has yet to win an argument with Bobby Unser." And that was Bobby Unser, winner through and through, rest in peace, champion. And sir, we'll go back to the other departed soul, Mr. Dick Mann. These are the famous last words for today, and they come from him. He said, and I quote, "My goal was never to be the best racer, but to finish ahead of them," end of quote. Final words from you, Mr. Rogers.
Well, we go to Spain, Nasser. We're all pumped up, Fernando country, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, I have a funny feeling that LCH is going to win.
You know what? I have to agree with you. And why is that? The car?
No, it's because of his teammate. See, we've been heaping praise on LCH all this time, but it's his teammate. You see what I'm saying?
What is he doing?
Nothing.
Well, you know, if his teammate finishes second, he can help Lewis win his number 8 championship. But, you know, Lewis really does not need Bottas's help. He'll get it on his own.
Well, he's had plenty of help from Bottas anyway. So, Bottas, he's a good teammate.
Well, he's good for bringing in a lot of points. You know, Toto Wolff knows motor racing and he used to race himself. I'm sure he's happy with Bottas's performance. You cannot expect Bottas to beat Lewis Hamilton, just like I don't expect Sergio Perez to beat Max Verstappen. It's just not going to happen. Course of the season, it's very hard to... You know, the problem with these people who are very talented, they just seem to find a way to win. I think we saw that in the season opener also. And it's very exciting. I'm very excited about the season, man. I wish there were 3 or 4 drivers fighting for the championship, but we have to enjoy with tools of the trade we have. So it's very exciting.
It is very exciting. So I'm congratulating you now for his 100th pole and 98th win. It's going to be exciting. Keep up the good work, Nas.
I got to say this thing. If these two drivers were not driving these cars, it would be a free-for-all for anybody to win the championship. I mean, these guys are really, really showing their class and performance. There's no question about it. Especially Max. His car is not as good as the Mercedes overall, and he's been hustling them for a few years now.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull is competing with Mercedes strictly because of Max. I mean, if they didn't have Max, they would really... I mean, Mercedes would look really dominant. Max has actually helped me out by toning it down a little bit, but that car has no business competing with LCH or Mercedes. It's strictly Max. Red Bull has a long way to go to get even close to Mercedes, especially knowing Toto and how much reserve they keep on the backside, just in case Red Bull discovers a new fuel or something. But in the end, I mean, we've got an 8th championship. We've got Grand Prix coming out of the wazoo. I'm happy for the LCH people all over the world. And listen, I just want to thank everybody who listens to the show. Thank you and good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.